This is big lie. The Bosch industry always uses the weakest spot of humans in order to bring in their deadly ideology. In this case, they say, well, you care for children, but you also have to care for the grown up, for the mother. If you really care for the mother, you don't want her to die. And they act as if this would be a common problem, that the people die. It's not. In Malta, we have black and white again. Zero mortality for more than a decade already, just because of normal healthcare.
Alexander Chuguel. He is the one who rocketed to international fame when he confronted the pagan worship and idolatry permitted by Pope Francis in the Vatican. He's widely known as the Pachamama Destroyer. He's been praised by cardinals for his zeal. Alexander stood for true orthodoxy, hurling the Pachamama idols into the Tiber River. Now, in this special edition of the John Henry Weston Show, LifeSite News' Austrian correspondent Andreas Welzer speaks firsthand with Alexander Chuguel, getting his personal experience of what we need to do to save the West from idolatry, pagan worship, and the many ideologies, pro-abortion and otherwise, pushed by globalists. You, our faithful supporters and viewers, stand in the breach. Stay tuned. You're not going to miss this one. I'm John Henry Weston. And this is the John Henry Weston Show.
I'm here with Alexander Chuguel. Many know you for throwing the Pachamama statues into the Tiber back in 2019, but that's not what you usually do on a day-to-day basis. You're a pro-life activist, and you have been for many years, and a leader in the pro-life movement. And right now, there's a big fight in Austria that maybe many people haven't heard of in the state of Tyrol. There's an abortion law that could be introduced that could basically introduce state-funded abortion. And what is going on there? And you're, as far as I know, leading a campaign right now to prevent this law or to fight this law. And can you talk a bit about that and what exactly is going on here?
Yes. So what we see in Tyrol is a very severe attack on the right to life. Especially as everything we will see now, maybe being introduced in Tyrol, will definitely be introduced on a not so in a not so far future in the rest of Austria as well. So if we talk about Tyrol, please keep in mind that it's always about the whole country and therefore always about all of Europe, because you know how it works. They try to implement certain pro-abortion rules in different parts of Europe and then start the legal process by saying, well, but in this member state of the European Union, it's legal. Why it's not in my member state, etc. Good. So what they do in Tyrol is there is a government between the so-called conservative party, ÖVP, the Österreichische Volkspartei, and the socialist party, SPÖ. And in this coalition program, they say that one of their goals is to make sure that every woman always has the right to decide whether she wants an abortion or not. That's one of the main sentences of the program. And in addition to this, they say that in order to ensure this, they either have to support and to help private abortionists so that they can grow and that maybe more private abortionists come to their role and erect abortion clinics there. Or they have to do this via a public hospital. So that's one of the two ideas they had. Maybe just to give you a status quo, in Tyrol right now, we talk about 700 to 1,000 abortions every year, and we talk about one doctor performing them. There's one doctor named Dr. Wolf, and he performs them. So the situation is, as you see, not as easy for the abortionists, as there are hardly any doctors who want to perform abortions, obviously, because the more, the better actually your science gets, the closer you see that this is life from the very conception up until the natural end, so the end in general. So it's very difficult for them to find new abortionists. So the situation is that they now ask in public one member of the coalition parties from the Socialist Party asked now publicly to introduce a new law saying that every abortion must be funded by the public insurance system. What we call Abtreibung auf Krankenschein is the German term for this. It means abortion must be paid by the insurance, which therefore means everyone pays for abortion. Because as you know, in the United States it's a little bit different, but in Austria we have we cannot opt out of our insurance. We have to pay the insurance. So that's one of the things. And obviously it's a little bit difficult to introduce such a law, because you cannot say, okay, now everyone has to pay for a certain decision of certain people, even though our law officially considers abortion still a crime. So it's very difficult, even though, I don't know, you know the legal status in Austria, it's officially a crime, but you're not punished for the crime if you follow certain rules. And the rules are unfortunately very, very open and are getting more and more open every year. Good, so that's the situation. So what lies behind this idea of the socialists is obviously that they want to push the agenda they have in the coalition program. And the agenda in the coalition program is not this, but to introduce abortion, to make sure abortion is available always in every part of the world. So that's the whole fight. What are we doing? I'm not the main initiator behind the campaign, but we are supporting a campaign done by a wonderful pro-life organization, Jugend für das Leben, founded already decades ago. It's the oldest, I think, one of the oldest pro-life organizations in Austria. I'm also a member of them. And the Jugend fürs Leben started a campaign where they organized a demonstration on the 14th of January, so the weekend after Epiphany, in order to state very clearly that the Tyroleans especially cannot allow this to happen. So we decided to support them in as we always do. So as you know, I was working with March for Life. So obviously, March for Life also helps them and is part of the organization committee. But also, I'm part of the help in a way that I try to get as many Catholics as possible to see what's going on there and to also understand that if they do not fight abortion, they will not win any other fight. If you do not defend the unborn life, you should not go out and pretend that you can win any other political fight. It's impossible. If you don't defend the most innocent unborn, you cannot pretend that you defend anyone else. It's just impossible. So that's my situation right now. We are rallying as much as we can in order to get as many people as possible on the 14th of January on the streets of Innsbruck to demonstrate against this terrible law.
Okay, thank you. Why is Tyrol... I think it's especially important to you and also to Austria in general. It's called the Holy Land of Tyrol sometimes, because it's like the Catholic lung of Austria. It used to be for a long time. Why is it so important to you and so shocking that they are now trying to introduce this terrible law?
Well, there is quite some family importance to me because my family origins from Tyrol, so that's where my roots are. Even though I was born and raised in Vienna, my family origins in Tyrol, and I have lots of connections there. Went there with my family every summer and things like this. So yes, Tyrol is important for me. The Holy Land Tyrol, the Holy Land of Tyrol. The reason why we call it this is that in the past we did not only see amazing high numbers of priestly vocations and nun vocations and friars, etc. We had one of the highest density of priesthood in all of Europe was in Tyrol, which is quite amazing. And from old times, from ancient times on, Tyrol was always Catholic. So in Tyrol, we at once, obviously during the Protestant Revolution, there was a very, very short Protestant phase, but it never went through like it did in many other parts of society. And the interesting aspect about this is that not only in Tyrol, if you go... Tyrol is Tyrol is a mountain country, so we have tons of mountains there, very high mountains, very beautiful mountains. And in Tyrol, if you go in the main valleys of Tyrol, you can really climb any hilltop you find, and you will find 20 to 30 to 40 churches, chapels everywhere. It's one of the countries where you cannot really move more than 100 meters without discovering a new church or a new cross or something. And it's not strange. It's part of the tradition and the blood of the Tyroleans to be Catholic. Why do we call them not only the country of Tyrol, the Holy Land of Tyrol? And there's many reasons for this, but one of the reasons is that when the Freemasons And revolutionaries from the French Revolution brought forward and pushed their revolutionary agenda. The Tyroleans resisted quite a lot. And when then Napoleon came in, made an alliance with the Bavarians, and through the Bavarians tried to force Catholicism out of the Tyroleans, and by the way, tried to introduce the first vaccine mandate in history in Tyrol. Very interesting. He wanted to force vaccinate the Tyroleans, and was a very, very brave father of the Capucin father, who gave really brilliant, brilliant homilies against it, where he said, if you accept the forced vaccination, you actually accept Protestantism and you actually reject the Catholic understanding of also health and life. It's very interesting that Tyrol fought this battle 200 years ago already. And the hero of this Tyrolean battle was a farmer named Andreas Hofer. Andreas Hofer, every Austrian knows him, obviously, used to know him. Let's put it that way. Maybe, unfortunately, the young generation doesn't learn about him. But Andreas Hofer was a very pious man. He prayed the rosary every day. He went to confession very regularly. He attended mass as often as he could. He tried to go there every day if possible. And he then started to form a resistance against the Bavarian / French troops. It was most Bavarian there. And this resistance was extremely successful. And why was this resistance so successful? So at the end of the day, they lost the war because he was betrayed by someone who was bribed for money and was then kicked out of the role and was dying completely alone outside of the role. A poor man, Mr. Raffer is his name. He is called, by the way, the Judas of Tyrol, is the one who betrayed Andreas Hofer. So the interesting thing about him was when he was betrayed and he was killed, he was executed, even then the Tyroleans did not lose the fight here. They did not lose it in their minds. They did not lose it in their family, etc. They stayed Tyrolean, they stayed Catholic, especially through this whole time of persecution. And how did he do it? By introducing a very, very, it was already there, but he was one of the main proponents of it, introducing a very good understanding of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So like we saw in the Vendée, the resistance in the Vendée against the French Revolution and against everything coming from the French Revolution, we see exactly the same thing happening in Austria, in Tyrol. That's the reason why we call it the Holy Land of Tyrol, because we see that it was the Sacred Heart of Jesus leading the people into battle in a very, very good way, not brutal at all, very strong and very committed, and they won the biggest fight of all. They did not reject their religion, they did not lose their faith, and they stayed faithful up until the end. Tyrol was, up to the Second Vatican Council, the part of Austria we normally got the most priestly vocations from. In every family, I do not know any Catholic Tyrolean family who do not actively know that one of their relatives was a priest. It's more or less impossible to find such a thing in Tyrol.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing. It's even more sad that this is happening now in Tyrol. And another thing that's really sad and disappointing, that one of the parties you mentioned, the ÖVP, the Austrian People's Party, They are part of this government coalition that is trying to introduce this law now. And they're known as the conservative party in Austria. And they used to be actually very Catholic 50, 60 years ago still. Yeah. And now we've seen that they've really betrayed a lot of the conservative values and Christian values. And they've, especially on these life and family issues, and as we see here, what happened here? Like, what is your view here? Because this is something that's happening, or that has happened across Europe. We have that as in Germany, it's the same situation with the CDU, with the Christian Democrats in Germany, and with the Tories in Britain. It's also kind of the same, that these so-called conservative parties have really, you know, lost touch with Christian values, especially when it comes to family values, traditional family values and life values and so on. What is your view on that? And why is that happening? What's up with these conservative parties in Western Europe?
Yeah. So there are two things I want to add in order to understand a little bit the history of those parties. All those parties, the CDU in Germany as well, which means the Christian Democratic Union, and also the CSU, so the counterpart in Bavaria, the Christian Social Union, both as the ÖVP have as their traditional color black. And the reason why they have black is because the black refers to the black cassock of the priests. So this was not only a Christian party, it was really rooted in Catholicism. It's very interesting to see. And also, if you now look back in history and look at the main heroes of the times after the Second World War, after Hitler, all of them came from these backgrounds, where Catholics, for example, in Germany, was Konrad Adenauer, very, very faithful Catholic, who tried to go to Mass every day, who prayed the rosary in his office and so on. He was famous for this. In Austria, we had people like Leopold Fiegel, etc., who led the rosary processions, you know, the rosary reparation crusades, together with a servant of God, Pater Petrus Pavlicek. So we had all those things, a very big heritage of Catholic tradition, Catholic fight. And then a few things happened. First of all, when the corruption inside the structures of the church happened, it also happened there. We cannot separate this. So when we see that a revolutionary process suddenly happens inside traditional structures, like inside the parish and diocese structure, inside different foundations and different, you know, old ancient organizations, orders, etc., the same thing obviously happens also for them who work together with them. So unfortunately, the loss of faith in the clergy can be wonderfully seen here, but you can just look at the loss of faith at these parties. So the main reason why those so-called conservative parties are not conservative anymore are actually one of our biggest problems are two. First of all, they still call themselves conservative and they still officially are Christian. So the first, if you look at the party's program of the ÖVP, the first, very first sentence of the party program is that they are a Christian party. That the Christian principles are their principles. And they betray their Christian principles every day. In this coalition program, you see it black and white. It says, there is no doubt, it says, that abortion must always be the pure right of the woman. It says, without doubt, that's what they say. So they say, contrary to their own party's program, obviously, that abortion is now considered a right of the women. Obviously, we know why this is. The big abortion, they call abortion human right more or less already, and that's what they all want to press. So that's one thing. The biggest problem with those parties is that they betray us. It's in every war. If you have, let's talk about medieval wars. It's a little bit easier to talk about them. You have a city, you have a wall, and then you have some ground around the city wall, and then outside somewhere the enemy comes closer and closer and closer. The enemy is not your biggest problem. It is obviously a big problem, but the enemy shows your own problems. That's the main thing. So if the enemy comes and you know, I did a very good preparation with my wall. The people inside the city are living happily together, have a good fundament of faith, a good fundament of trust where they can work with each other. And there are good structures around the city which help us getting food inside the city, even if there is the enemy outside through, I don't know, hidden tunnels, whatever. Then you would never have a problem. You can win even against very big enemies. The problem is that the people who betray you most are the people within your own rows, more or less. The people who are in your army. And the main problem with the ÖVP is that they still, in every election campaign, send out one or two or three or four politicians which play the Catholic Christian card in order to attract those voters. And this needs to stop. It needs to stop. And this is really black and white. We see it now. There's no doubt about it. It's not a conspiracy theory. You can just read the coalition program. That's actually it.
Just a quick note before we return. If you would like to stay up to date on LifeSite's coverage of the latest life, family, and culture news, subscribe to one of our many newsletters by going to lifesitenews.com/subscribe. And if you'd like to help us bring our truth-telling coverage to millions around the world, please consider making a one-time or monthly donation at give.lifesitenews.com. And now, back to the video.
It's really, like you said, it's sort of an attack from within, people who proclaim to be Christians or claim to be Christians. And yeah, so, but other than that, there's other pro-life fights going on in Europe, obviously, yes, all the time. We've just seen one huge fight, and we've seen a huge protest in Malta, because Malta, it's a small country, but they had one of the biggest pro-life protests ever, probably, and especially if you compare it to the size of the country with 20,000 people. And they protested against a law that could allow abortion for the first time, because in Malta, it's, until now, it has been outlawed completely. But now they could introduce, you know, abortion for health reasons, which critics say could mean everything. I mean, it could mean mental health. It could mean, you know, it could basically mean abortion until birth if you find the right health reasons to do it. And the president of Malta, a brave man, I think, has said that he is willing to resign if he would. So if he would have to sign this law, he said, he'd rather resign than sign this law, basically. Yeah. And there are other fights, like there are legal cases all the time at the European Courts for Human Rights against the Polish pro-life laws, because as most people will probably know, Poland also has very strong pro-life laws, one of the strongest in Europe. And in Germany, it's very bad because in Germany has a very pro-abortion, anti-family government right now. And they are trying to, well, they already abolished the so-called advertising ban on abortion. Yes. And now they plan to, or they've said it several times, that they want to decriminalize abortion completely. And these are some examples of the fights going on. And what are the most important fights in Europe, in your opinion? And how do you see this, maybe the biggest dangers and chances that you have in Europe right now in the pro-life movement?
Let me talk about the three examples you brought up, because I think they're all very good examples. I have in front of me the press release about the thing going on in Malta. The thing, it's a wrong word for it, was one of the biggest and best protests I ever seen in the whole pro-life movement. It's really amazing, very well organized, etc. And it's so interesting because 20,000 people, more than 20,000 people going on the streets in Malta is really 4 or 5% of the population, which is quite something, because just imagine you have 5% of the population of any country on the streets. This is, we would consider this a very, very serious protest. So that's one thing. The main argument they use in Malta in order to introduce abortion as a health issue, as you already said, is that they say, well, we need to reduce maternal mortality. Mm-hmm. The maternal mortality in Malta is zero for more than 10 years already, just by taking care of the women in a normal medical way. This is big lie. The abortion industry always uses the weakest spot of humans in order to bring in their deadly ideology. In this case, they say, well, you care for children, but you also have to care for the grown up, for the mother. If you really care for the mother, you don't want her to die. And they act as if this would be a common problem, that the people die. It's not. In Malta, we have it black and white again. Zero mortality for more than a decade already, just because of normal healthcare. So yeah, that's definitely not a reason. But Poland, I don't want to engage too much here because there are tons of fights going on. But the interesting aspect about Poland is that the Polish society rejects abortion mainly. So if you go to Poland, I guess, you know, lots of Polish people. The average Polish guy is Catholic. And obviously after the example of John Paul II, especially in the resistance times in communism, the Polish people really understood that if they reject Catholicism, they reject the last thing keeping them actually up, keeping also the spirits up against communism. So they understood Catholic faith is the cure for communism. That's what they understood. And up until today, you see that this does shape the mentality of the Polish people quite a lot, so that they were ready to implement new anti-abortion laws. And that's the amazing thing about it. They do not defend old laws. They implement the new ones. That's really amazing. And obviously got attacked heavily by the EU structures, especially by Ursula von der Leyen right now, who shames her in every document they put out, and wants to take money away from them and ask them to pay fines and things like this, and says that they are not allowed to do this. It's against EU constitution, whatever this is.
The president of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen.
The president of the EU Commission, obviously, Ursula von der Leyen. So that's about Poland. Quite interesting. It's a big fight, and I have to say Poland is a very interesting country. And many people don't understand that there are 40 million people living there. So it's huge. It's really big. So Germany has double the numbers, but Poland is really big. Austria only has 9 million inhabitants. So this really shows you a little bit scale. About Germany, well, in Germany, we have the same situation as in Austria. So abortion is officially considered illegal, but it's now being opened through exemptions all the time. So first, abortion in Germany was actually a very good law. They said that in abortion is not only illegal, but also if it's now opened, it's not even there because it is illegal, you're not allowed to make any advertisement for it. And you see the difference, unfortunately. Now they are allowed to do it, and now this whole culture of life comes into the public sphere officially. That's different. Before that, it had to come via, you know, sideways, and they had to go around a little bit, and now it's official. About Germany, what can I say? The pro-life movement in Germany is growing. So we had this big March for Life in Berlin always, and now there's a second March for Life, which came up in Munich as well. One has to know, obviously, that Berlin and Munich are quite far away from each other. So I think it's quite natural that there are now two two places where this happened, and I think we will see this popping up in many other parts of the country. And now many Germans step by step understand that they need to fight for this way more than they used to, because one has to really understand that the German mind does not encourage protesting on the street a lot. They are not French people and they are not Italians, and so they all used to go to the streets. Germans do not. So Germany always takes ages. But I want to add, because many people always lose hope in Germany, that inside Germany we have tons of really highly intelligent, very professional people who fight for the life and against the killing of unborn children in their mother's womb. And it's amazing to see how much support you actually get from the pro-life circles in Germany. They are way, way bigger than you think. It's just that, unfortunately, with a leftist government, you cannot expect anything happening right now on government level. It's impossible. So one of the biggest things I had the chance that one of the people working for us did a little research on right now the state of the argumentation. I want to bring a few arguments to just show you what the leftists try to implement right now and how they argue. They say that there is a very bad, that there are not enough abortion places available, safe abortion places, and therefore abortions are unfortunately unsafe and deadly. Isn't it the biggest joke of history? It's unfortunately deadly to kill a child. Well, yeah, I could have told you that before. It's deadly. So it's interesting that they argue like this. I have a few things to say to this, but let's just go through the argumentation first. Then they say, unfortunately, it costs way too much. I can give you a number. In Austria, for example, an abortion costs between 700 and 1,000 euros. That's more or less the rough estimate. I give you another number. If you give birth to a child and have all those payments, this costs you more. So it's interesting to see. So the killing of the child is obviously way cheaper than keeping the child, and that's obviously a problem. So that's the reason why I think, by the way, that the Hungarian policy of helping the families by lifting taxes of them is a very, very good one, because that makes families way more competent and way more also secure and safe to go on and continue caring for the children and also having babies, which is such an important matter nowadays. Then they say that there are no, that the whole contraceptives are not for free and that they have to pay for them. And that's the reason why many people do not afford them. And that's the reason why many people get pregnant without wanting it. One of the biggest misconceptions, you cannot get pregnant without wanting it, except for rape, because you want to sleep with someone. That's it. If you're not, rape is a different thing in this regards, but everything else, there is not such a thing as unwanted pregnancy except rape. It's actually not even possible, because, as you know. Yeah. So the thing is that, yeah, you might not consider this outcome of your sexual intercourse, but if you understand anything about biology, then you know that this is a possible outcome of your sexual intercourse. So there is not such a thing as real unwanted pregnancies. Then they say it's important for the fulfillment, the self-fulfillment of women, so that they have the possibility only to be a real woman if they have the possibility to have the control of their own body. But the bad Catholic Church wants to destroy it and wants to take away the decisions over their own body. Well, let's talk about this argument for a second. It's not per se wrong from a modernist point of view to look at it like this. If you always heard that the Catholic Church says follow the commandments and the modern society tells you we do not have any commandments. But is it really true? I think not. If you look at the modern society, they give you way more rules to follow, way more rules. You're not allowed to speak freely about anything. You're not allowed to do what with your money, what you want to do with your money, because your money is taken away by the state. As you know, Austria taxes up to 50% plus fees and so on. So some people pay 70% of what they earn back to governmental structures. Completely insane, etc. They tell you that you are free to do whatever you want, but whatever you want has to be against Christian values. It's also interesting because as soon as you try to fight for Christian values, I give you an example. Let's say I want to create a new Catholic school following the traditional Catholic idea. It's more or less impossible in Central Europe. In Germany, it's totally impossible, more or less. I know people who did this, and most of them did not succeed, even though they had a wonderful team, very good concept, very good curricula, very good financing, and just did not work because government does not want those schools to work. So are we really free in this society? Are we really free in a society where they force vaccines into our arms, where they force us to wear masks, where they force us to be separated from our own family because of such nonsense. And now we all clap to the Chinese, obviously, because they fight against this tyranny. But here, the same thing happened here. And nobody clapped when we did all this whole resistance against it. So are we really? No, we are not, obviously. So is the church really in a situation where they also suppress people? No, they don't. But the church does something very important. It tells the truth. And if you want to know the truth, that there are certain decisions in your life and certain things you have to reject and certain things you have to do, it's your free choice to do so. If you want to end up in heaven or not, it's your free choice. But the church obviously says that the state, a good Christian state, has to create some rules which prohibit certain things which are definitely bad for society as a whole. And that's obviously abortion, because what could be more bad for society as a whole as the killing of the next generation of this society? I think it's very obvious. So, nonsense argument. Then what they say is, because abortion is still considered a crime, it stigmatizes women who want to get an abortion. Well, to be very honest, yes, obviously it does. Because if it's a crime, then you normally talk about the people who commit the crime as you refer to them as criminals. Well, it's now you can discuss how much who is the bigger criminal, and the different situation is different. You know, if a woman is obviously forced to do an abortion, she's not the criminal. Then the abortionist and the one who forces her are the criminals. But obviously, if a woman says, "I want to kill my own child," this would be considered criminal. Just imagine the child is outside of her body, already born. We would all consider her a terrible criminal. She would be in every newspaper. Woman in cold blood killing her own child. That would be a huge news. So yes, it does stigmatize them. But what they say is, well, it's stigmatized in a moment of need. And that's not the worst argument. It is a good argument, because obviously, yes, modern society doesn't help women the way it should. Look at Hungary. Well, Hungary is really a good example here, because Hungary, unfortunately, did not introduce lots of pro-life laws. One little one now, recently, thank God. But they introduced lots of pro-family laws. And look, and the abortion numbers went down 50%. So yeah, of course, if you want to support families and you do support families, obviously you create a better situation for the women. Yeah, I think that's quite logical. And then obviously they say, yeah, well, in the cause of rape, which is one of the most ugly arguments you can find from any pro-abortionist. I never found any pro-abortionist to say it. I'm always pro-life except for rape. I never found any pro-abortion. I found a few weak pro-lifers who said this, but I never found a pro-abortionist. Why is this an argument that is used by many people? Because rape is a very, very ugly thing. Just imagine, against the will of maybe a teenage girl, and just imagine the most terrible situation. It's an underage girl raped by whoever, and then the child is there, and so on, this guy had a very strange face, and she now has dreams about the child looking exactly like the father. That's more or less the situation they built. This happens in real numbers, 1, 2, 3, 5, maybe 10 times in Austria, for example, a year. Are we as a society not able to take care of 10, maybe 20 children a year who are in need? And maybe if the woman really says, I cannot have the child afterwards because it's just not possible. I think we are. In Austria, there's a rough estimation. It's a little bit difficult to get the real numbers on this, that on every child being born and put out for adoption, there are 10 couples who want to adopt the child. So I think that this is really not a problem. And I believe that a Christian society would always and will always find an answer, as we did in the last thousands of years. We always had an answer for this, and we still have. And then they say that the consultants, that they have to go have consultants, consultancy is bad. Because it's difficult, they have to decide, and then they have to go to the doctor to ask them for help. Well, obviously, that's a nonsense argument, because you have to have this in many other aspects as well. You can, for example, not do certain operations in hospital without being first signing a paper that you actually know what's going to happen. So that's just invalid in my eyes. And obviously, they now talk about Roe v. Wade and say, well, because of Roe v. Wade, we now have to put this right to abortion into constitutional rank in order to secure it from things like Roe v. Wade. Obviously, totally ignoring that the United States have a different law system than we have, and it's not the same. So we cannot just act as if this would happen in the same way. It does not. And second of all, if you would change something considered a crime into suddenly a constitutional law, and if this would work, I ask you, just as someone who views this interview right now, what is this? Is the constitution a constitution of which system is this a constitution, if not of a criminal system? Then it's very easy. If you say a crime is suddenly a constitutional law, then the constitution becomes criminal. Very easy. And then actually the question is, does it work? No, it does not. Because if it's constitutional to kill little children, I don't want to be part of any government who has this as a constitution. I think this is very, very, very clear to understand. Well, that's the situation. So I think all the arguments they bring up, and that's the main discussion right now, as in every other country, it's very easy to answer. It's very, very easy to answer. So let's give them the answers and let's show them that this is wrong and fight for the pro-life cause. You can never lose. Every child saved because of the fight for the right for those children to live is what we are really fighting for. We want those laws to be abolished, but what we really want, first and foremost, is that the sin of killing an unborn child is not being committed, and the child can live in the way God wants it to live. That's it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much, Alexander. Thank you for what you do, and thank you for sitting down with me for this interview. Thank you.
Thank you for the interview.
Hi, everyone. This is John Henry Weston. We hope you enjoyed this video. And to see more like this, be sure to hit the subscribe button below to get all the latest content from LifeSite News. So check out our links in the description to read more, sign up for our newsletter, and connect with us on social media so that you can stay up to date with all of the latest life, family, and culture news. Thanks for watching, and may God bless you.